This is Remembering Yugoslavia, the show exploring the memory of a country that no longer exists. I'm your librarian, Peter Korchnak. I read a lot, mostly for this project over the past few years, but also adjacently. My stack right now includes a book on heritage transformations and one on football in the former Yugoslavia, a volume on ground and nationalism, and a history of the Gulag. In general, nonfiction comprises almost 100% of my reading, and has for decades now. There was a point in my life where fiction, novels and short stories, just seemed like a pastime. I felt, and still feel, why read fiction when actual reality offers plenty of fascinating and worthy and you-can't-make-this-up stories? This is particularly the case in the Balkans and the former Yugoslavia. So literature remains a blind spot for me, but it's an important piece in the puzzle of Yugoslavia's memory, and so I must tackle it. Literature was also one of the top requested topics in my recent survey of listeners and readers. So today, and in the next episode of Remembering Yugoslavia, we're going to dip our reading toes into the vast pool of literature from, and partly about, the former Yugoslavia. Here with me to sketch out the scene is Eamon McGrath. He is a writer and critic based in Brooklyn, New York. He reviews literature from Southeast Europe on Instagram, at Balkan Books. His work has appeared in Balkanist, Full Stop, and the Upper New Review. He has Tufts University degrees in international affairs with a focus on the former Yugoslavia, and he has previously lived and worked in the ex-Yugoslav space. McGrath sees two major threads in the literature of the former Yugoslavia, both the kingdom and the socialist one. First, literature as being an element or even a tool in the nation-building project. Here, the most pertinent was the question whether Yugoslav literature is a single literature, the way Italy or Germany cohered into a single culture, or a combination of multiple national literatures in their own languages that could potentially be brought together into a singular body.
A demonstrative example was an author I think was determined by many to be the national poet, and that is Petr Petrovich Njegoš, in particular his poem The Mountain Wreath. And I think in some ways it's really symbolic because it pulls on these domestic indigenous trends in literature of this epic oral poetry, which is a really, really significant and specific literary category within the former Yugoslavia. But I think at the same time, it's really interesting because that poem that would in some ways be canonized as the great national poem has these themes that could be brought into, for instance, especially into Tito's Yugoslavia, ideas about heroism, defiance, and collectivism.
Njegoš was a 19th century Montenegrin prince, bishop, philosopher, and poet. The epic poem Gorski Vjenac, The Mountain Wreath, is a centerpiece of Montenegrin and Serbian national canon. The story centers on an 18th century mass execution of Montenegrins who converted to Islam. Its themes of heroism, fighting for freedom and justice and against evil and traitors, traditional folk values and wisdom form important building blocks of Montenegrin and Serbian identity.
But at the same time, it contained these internal contradictions. And we see this with, for instance, the particular Serbian nationalist elements of the poem, with the particular Islamophobic elements of the poem that were in some ways never truly reconciled of how this poem can speak for all of Yugoslavia, but at the same time had these elements that couldn't be brought together.
The appearance of a Montenegrin / Serbian national poem in a story of Yugoslav literature may come as a surprise. And it certainly did for me until I also considered that ideologists from all corners have used it for their respective purposes. Perhaps it's testimony to the poem's universal appeal. Of course, the poem offers a natural resource for nationalists, Islamophobes, ethnic cleansers on the Montenegrin and Serbian side. But as you heard in the episode about women partisans, the communists dipped into the well of epic folk poetry, including the Mountain Wreath, in their propaganda to recruit peasants for their cause, portraying themselves as a continuation and culmination of the heroic struggle for freedom and justice. After the war, the Mountain Wreath and its author were reinterpreted to fit the socialist country's narrative, particularly its theme of fighting traitors. This was common. The regime could not ignore folk heroes and routinely appropriated them for its own purposes. To take another example, the 16th century Croatian peasant revolt leader Matija Gubec was for the communists a convenient fighter for freedom and against oppression. The Mountain Wreath fell out of communist favor as nationalism ramped up in the 1970s.
But I think that's a really important example of showing the Yugoslav literary project for its aims, but also some of the contradictions that lied within it.
After Yugoslavia embarked in the 1950s on its own socialist path, with worker self-management at its core, it underwent progressive decentralization of government and economy. As the Federation ceded power to the republics, the role of Yugoslavia and of an overarching Yugoslav identity became increasingly contentious. The creator of self-management and chief Communist Party ideologue, Edvard Kardel himself, rejected the idea that a Yugoslav nation was emerging, even as he considered Yugoslavia the state and expression of interests of its constituent nations. Instead, patriotism was defined in terms of socialist Yugoslavia, while ethnic/national identity was left to the republics and their constituent nations. Literature reflected this shift.
I think that trend within Yugoslav as a national literary project started to be abandoned sometime around the 1960s, in particular the new constitution in 1963, where you really had to turn towards these national literatures of Slovenian literature versus Serbian literature versus Croatian literature, etc. But I think an important piece here is just this idea of like writers being part of that process, asking questions and thinking about ideas of nationality, of identity, of belonging, of collectivism. And in some ways also, especially in the later decades of Yugoslavia, of seeing some of the challenges that lay at the core of that. In some ways, even precipitating that in some of the writing that was expressed that period, where I think this more skepticism and criticism, as well as broaching of more controversial topics, especially in the 1980s, what could be viewed as a failure to build a single unified literary culture in some ways was representative of one of the many factors that might have led to the country's demise.
Another dimension of Yugoslav literature was its international outlook.
The idea of Yugoslavia pulling on different literary trends, for instance, especially in parts of northern Yugoslavia, Slovenia, Croatia, Vojvodina, for example, drawing on Central European literary trends, while other parts of Yugoslavia drawing on, you know, Byzantine elements, being in communication and conversation with different countries, different literary trends, is, I think, really important. And then also became representative, especially during the period of Yugoslavia post-World War II, with this idea of Yugoslavia's being, and I hesitate to use this word because of some of the Balkanist ideas about the idea of Yugoslavia being this in-between space.
I identify as Central European, so the UCE connection is important.
When we're talking about ex-ULit, we're talking about Central European literature.
Danya Bujas also comes to us from Bookstagram, an Instagram-based community of book readers and reviewers. Originally an art historian and now working in public relations, all of which is unrelated to Bookstagram, she spoke to me from her hometown of Šibenik. Posting on Instagram as @DanciReads, she reads, quite voraciously, and reviews books by authors from the former Yugoslavia and beyond. She also hosts the XU Book Challenge, #XULit, which promotes the reading and reviewing of authors from the former Yugoslavia.
So we are talking about a kind of fiction that tends to be, let's say, a little bit depressive, full of existential angst, a little bit dark, you know? And maybe that's the reason why I didn't really go through some kind of a international trend cycle. You know, it was never like literature that people were reading outside of maybe Europe.
I am humbled to say it, but this is a major reason for my literary ignorance. These quote-unquote Central European books and authors are simply too difficult. In fiction, I was in the Stephen King and sci-fi camp, and what serious literature I did read, well, there's not much to say about it. Perhaps it's too much history, perhaps it's indeed the style, but I simply cannot handle the density and intensity. My loss, I know.
Once you sort of go through authors from the 70s or 80s or 90s who are part of the Central European tradition, as a reader, you are really strong. You can read whatever, whenever in your life, because that literature is literally very hard, not just when it comes to topics, but when it comes to writing style. You know, it's a beautiful but challenging writing style for a reader to absorb, especially, I would say, readers who are not used to Central European literature, who are, for example, used to English-based literature. It can be challenging because of the, you know, never-ending sentences and monologues that never end, chapters of monologues, inner monologues, right? So what I would recommend to everyone is sort of an introduction to ex-Yugoslavian literature. He's definitely my favorite author. He's an author that made me want to read more from my home country and from the neighboring countries. His name is Danilo Kiš.
Danilo Kiš was one of the most important novelists and translators in the former Yugoslavia. Born in 1935 in Subotica to a Hungarian Jewish father and a Montenegrin Orthodox Christian mother, he saw literature as an antidote to all the isms that plagued his century, according to historian Mark Thompson. Several of Kiš's books exist in translation, most importantly the short story collections A Tomb for Boris Davidovich and The Encyclopedia of the Dead, which blend history and fiction in search of the Central European and Balkan identity.
The style itself is very challenging to read. I've never read him in translation, of course, but, you know, the sentences are very complex and very long, and you need to focus. You cannot read it before going to bed.
For authors of Jewish origin, questions of identity in the face of history that attempts to repeatedly erase them are huge. You really can't talk about Central European literature without Jewish authors.
An author who is improperly appreciated, especially in the Anglophone world, is the Serbian author Aleksandar Tišma, who wrote several novels, the 1960s and 70s particularly. I think he is a wonderful and masterful writer, writes particularly surrounding the Holocaust. Tišma's many set in Vojvodina. Aleksandar Tišma also has Jewish heritage.
That in-betweenness of Central Europe, that is, between Germany and Russia, and of Yugoslavia, between the empires, between the West and the East, is what marks the literature of Yugoslavia.
It was really made concrete in Yugoslavia post-World War II because of Yugoslavia's specific non-aligned position vis-a-vis the Eastern Bloc, that it did become this kind of bridge. And so much of that bridge ideology also comes from the Bridge on the Drina, but Ivo Andrić, of course, the idea of Yugoslavia being this space to connect to the East and West. And we see this in literature, that it's, you know, pulling in trends from both sides. And I think that's part because of that non-alignment.
That Yugoslav literature drew on Western trends was made possible by the lack of censorship, at least relative to Eastern Bloc countries, and at least since the 1950s following the split with the Soviet Union. Levels of censorship did vary, with screws tightening, for example, around the Croatian Spring in the early 1970s, or tensions in Kosovo in the early 1980s, or completely loosening from the mid-1980s on.
Lastly, on that international side, is I think the idea of Yugoslav authors, but particularly post-Yugoslav authors, engaging with the world. And I think that's, in part, was an aspect of the war and immigration that many of these authors who left and went to other countries, who began writing in other countries, who were writing for other international audiences, was clearly in communication with these kinds of readers.
Because these readers weren't completely up to speed on the complicated place that Yugoslavia was, often these authors and their works were presented as kind of explainers.
Sometimes, which is forced, you know, I've seen in editions of Ivo Andrić's The Bridge and the Drina being contextualized as this, you know, this will help the reader understand the violence and the wars of Yugoslavia in the 1990s, which is ludicrous because that's not at all what Ivo Andrić was writing about. On the flip side, I think, again, within Yugoslav literature is this kind of domestic and internal focus. And this is drawing on indigenous traditions. And most importantly here, again, is that epic oral folk poetry. And then also the ideas of pluralism, of the idea of having multiple voices, which you see both in some of these epic folk poems that have these, you know, wide casts of characters, but then carried through, for example, through Ivo Andrić and other authors who bring in, you know, these wide casts of characters and bring in multiple voices, multiple perspectives. That kind of dialogue between the internal focus and the external focus is also really important in the Yugoslav literary context.
Another thing to note was the attitudes of Yugoslav writers toward Yugoslavia, where it's possible to trace the country's rise and demise in its literature.
So the beginning, I think, in the first decade or two of Yugoslavia, I think, is marked by this period of what I would call Yugo-optimism. This is particularly the partisan novels that emerged post-World War II, building these national myths of heroism, resilience, fighting off the Germans, etc. These are authors like Branko Čopić, Cyril Kozmač, Miško Kranjec, Vladimir Nazor, who I know has been featured on this podcast, as well as, interestingly, an author like Dobrica Čosić, whose novel Far Away as the Sun was this great partisan epic. And then later, Čosić himself became more of a, some of his writing had more nationalist elements by the time of the 1980s. But, you know, a book like Nazor's With the Partisans, which helped to really build these national myths of World War II, and focusing on these questions of, you know, building this new country, moving past, you know, not delving into these questions, fraught questions of the past, but focusing on the future, on the experience and heroism of Tito's partisans, and the future of this new socialist country. And then another element, I think, of this Yugo-optimism might add is the quintessential Yugoslav author, Ivo Andrić, whose writings, particularly Bridge on the Drina, writing of this idea of Yugoslavia, of this being multiple peoples, multiple histories that are contested and fraught, and Bridge on the Drina being set, you know, over centuries with these different interpretations and understandings of what happened in this place, the different myths that emerged. But in some ways, I think Andrić has an optimism that these stories can be reconciled, that truths can be found, that there's an ability to live together for kind of a single narrative to be pulled together out of all of these things. So I think this is kind of an optimism in some ways, you know, and it's also an example here where we have Bosnia in some ways being the representative of Yugoslavia, which we see in other books as well, that Bosnia is kind of this mini Yugoslavia. And I think in some ways, Andrić is making a case for this hope that despite these contested histories, there's an ability to build something singular, which is this belief in the Yugoslav national project.
The Bridge on the Drina is probably the most recommended book from the former Yugoslavia. If I were to draw up a list of essential reads about the former Yugoslavia, The Bridge on the Drina would be right up there. Andrić received a Nobel Prize in Literature for it, quote, for the epic force with which he has traced themes and depicted human destinies drawn from the history of his country. Which country? Milovan Djilas once asked Andrić in an interview, what do you feel like, a Croat or a Serb? Andrić, who was born in Travnik in Bosnia and Herzegovina, said, you know, I couldn't tell you myself. I've always felt Yugoslav. Nadrini Čuprija is set in Visegrad, and the main character is the 16th century bridge on the river that forms the border between Serbia and Bosnia and Herzegovina, and where the Western and Eastern Roman empires met. And the story sweeps over centuries of the bridge's lifespan. People and rulers and empires and countries come and go, the bridge remains. I read the book some 10 years ago as my interest in Yugoslavia was rekindling. It's dense, it's slow, but it's also quite beautiful, with some amazing sentences on the passage of time, on remembering and forgetfulness, on love. You'll never look at this or any other bridge in the former Yugoslavia the same way again.
After that, though, I would argue that we see this trend of what I would call Yugo-pessimism, which begins arguably around the 1960s and continues onwards. And a couple of authors and novels I would cite here would be Meša Selimović's Death and the Dervish from 1966, as well as The Houses of Belgrade by Borisav Pekić, and then significantly Milorad Pavić's Dictionary of the Khazars in 1984. Some of these novels are really critical of the Yugoslav national project. So in Death and the Dervish, we have this portrayal, it's set in the Ottoman period, but in some ways it's really critical of this opaque, unjust police state. And this is part pulling on Selimović's own experience, where Selimović's brother had been killed by the partisans after World War II. He was in charge of overseeing the distribution of furniture, I believe, that had been confiscated, and was killed in partisan as an example of someone because he had stolen some of that furniture. So in some ways, Death and the Dervish is pulling on some of these themes where the main character, his brother, has been imprisoned in an Ottoman jail, and the security state, it's unjust, it's opaque, it's corrupting. Selimović may have been more obliquely referring to the Yugoslav state.
In Death and the Dervish, the titular, quite undecisive and not exactly honorable dervish in 18th century Bosnia attempts to free his imprisoned brother and in the process reflects on his life and faith itself. The novel depicting the oppressiveness of the Ottoman regime was indeed most widely read as a critique of communist Yugoslavia.
And then I think in some ways the quintessential anti-Andrić novel, I would say, is Pavić's Dictionary of the Khazars, where he is portraying contested history. So in Dictionary of the Khazars, we have three different religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, that have these three different stories of how this people, the Khazars, an ancient people, converted to their religion. And each religion is making a case that the Khazars converted to their religion. And we have these contested histories, all with their own version of what happened and different experiences and perspectives. And they do not come together. We do not understand what happens in the end. There's no Andrić-like reconciliation of these different narratives. So in some ways, I think it becomes this almost anti-Andrić, anti-Yugoslav novel, where it's this, I think, more of a hopelessness about there's no way to bridge these differences.
Milorad Pavić's 1984 debut novel Dictionary of the Khazars is written as an encyclopedic dictionary, hence its subtitled lexicon novel, which can be read in a number of ways, chronologically, hypertextually jumping around through references, end to beginning, as books within the book, as something like a feast eaten in a dream, as Pavić put it. The non-story revolves around the history of a fictional nation and its chroniclers and historians. The Khazars are a metaphor for a small people surviving in between great powers and great religions, Pavić told the New York Times. The novel was perhaps the most prominent example in the postmodern turn in the literature of the former Yugoslavia.
In the 1980s and 1990s, we have this turn towards generally more postmodernism, which I think is on one hand, again, this connection to international trends. Authors here include Kish, but also Dubravka Ugrešić, Zemezin Nehmedinović, Daša Drndić, Vladimir Arsenjević, Slavenko Drakulić, Svetislav Basara, and others.
Dubravka Ugrešić is one of my favorite authors from the former Yugoslavia. I've read all her essay collections, some more than once, and even her novel, The Ministry of Pain, which, among other things, deals with the question of nostalgia for the disappeared country. Ugrešić's critical, often scathing and always witty and erudite reflections on nationalism, the flag bearers of which essentially chased her out of her native Croatia in the 1990s, pop culture and Yugo nostalgia, migration in America, capitalism and democracy, trauma and historical revisionism, and much, much more really make her work a delight to read and reread. She described herself as post-Yugoslav, transnational, or even more precisely, post-national. I met her briefly at a reading in Portland, Oregon in 2018 when she was touring with her book American Fictionary. She signed in Croatian my Czech language edition of her Kultura Laži, The Culture of Lies, and she agreed to come on the show if I could do the interview in person at her home in Amsterdam. Our paths kept not crossing and I never did speak with her again. She died last year.
Dubravka Ugrešić especially had a really strong impact on me because of her sort of sharp mind. Sometimes in many of her books, she's recycling same ideas. So if you read like a lot of her work, at some point you would get a little bit maybe frustrated with the same topics of, you know, wars in the 90s popping up. But reading something of hers for the first time is an amazing experience just because she doesn't censor herself. She's very much politically incorrect. For everyone interested in her works, I would recommend one book that is sort of not that popular outside of Croatia. It's called Fox, and it's inspired really by her interest in Russian literature, not just in politics.
Ugrešić's novels have been described as metafiction. In Lisica, we travel around the world with the titular fox trying to parse what in fact is narrative, what's historical, and what's fictional.
And here, I think, on the one hand, this is tying into these international literary trends. But on the other hand, I think some of these trends are directly connected to the experience of Yugoslavia and its dissolution and the wars. Postmodernism, with focus on ideas of irony and metafiction, discontinuity and nonlinearity, skepticism, nihilism, etc. Many of these ideas that were circling again with the end of Yugoslavia and its collapse, as well as this idea of these pastiche ersatz histories that we see in novels by Svetislav Basara and Daniel Kish, among others, that are kind of these made-up alternative histories. And most importantly, I think within postmodernism is the idea of this distrust in meta-narratives, a disbelief in single truths. And in some ways, that describes the end of Yugoslavia, as this collapse in belief in the possibility of Yugoslavia, and the possibility of a single unifying truth that could unite different groups, different nations throughout. There are different perspectives and histories that remain contested. This is a great example of where we see kind of this international literary trend also corresponding to the experience on the ground.
As nationalism burgeoned in the 1980s, so did national literatures.
The end of Yugoslavia really precipitated the growth in these kind of more specific national literature. So again, moving from Yugoslav literature towards Slovenian literature and Macedonian literature and Montenegrin literature. But in some ways, that was always the case, I would argue, that despite some of Yugoslavia's broader goals, there were always these kind of national literatures. And part, again, is the role of language here, that Slovenian authors tended to be more read in Slovenian. We can see this like in school textbooks and primers, that those prepared in each country tended to focus more on authors from the specific country. And then, of course, also this role of center and periphery, is that generally writers writing in Serbo-Croatian were had more of a voice and more of a presence than, for example, a writer writing in Macedonian or Slovenian. We see this with the Association of Writers of Yugoslavia, which is intended as this kind of grand organizing body. But ultimately, by the 1960s and 1970s, it effectively collapsed and in some ways kind of mirrored the future of the country. And then it just splintered into these different republican associations, which would kind of, again, mirror the future of this connection between the literary project and the cultural project to the broader Yugoslav project.
Come travel with me in a country that no longer exists. This summer and fall, I'll be leading tours across the former Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia, from the cradle to the grave, is a 12-day journey across the history, present, and future of the disappeared country. Through three capitals and many stops along the way, we will trace Yugoslavia's history from its birth to its resting place and investigate the ways it remains alive today. Everywhere we go, guest guides and expert speakers will highlight more fascinating stories. Choose from tour dates in August, September, and October. Learn more and book at rememberingyugoslavia.com/tours. See you in Yugoslavia! When it comes to literature in the successor countries of the former Yugoslavia, the topics and themes depend to a great extent on the author's generation.
Many writers, I think, in Yugoslavia were dealing with questions about nationality, identity, politics, all these ideas that are related to history and the idea of Yugoslavia. To understand them and to read them, in some ways it is important to understand those pieces of where they're coming from, the specific contexts and the specific experience, I think, of Yugoslavia and those writers. I think one of the most important trends that we see in post-Yugoslav literature is kind of this trying to understand some of the history of, in part, it's Yugoslavia and part it's all of the 20th century, starting really, I guess, in some ways the 2000s, where this kind of this turn to try to process what the past century was, and this being this millennial marker of this past century. And I think when you go back and look at what has happened in former Yugoslavia over that period, you have the collapse of empires, you have the rise and fall of Yugoslavia twice, you have the Balkan Wars, World War I, World War II, an incredible amount of history, an incredible amount of tumult that I think is hard to understand depending on where the reader or listener is based. For instance, in the United States, I think it's hard to really grasp the amount of things that changed in that region over that period of time. Nations really just appearing and disappearing off the map, totally different experiences on through the wars, through different regimes, the dictatorships, through the Iron Curtain, etc. That marked a period, I think, of looking back to understanding what that was. So I think one trend you have here is kind of this looking back in a broader sense of these longer novels that tried to make sense of that period. In an international sense, this is kind of part of this turn towards what we might call the systems novel or like a maximalist novel. And authors outside of former Yugoslavia here, like Zadie Smith, for example, Salman Rushdie, David Foster Wallace, might be more familiar. The idea of like having a novel that builds in all of these characters and tries to make sense of this history. An author in a book that I think is really emblematic of that is The Walnut Mansion by Milinko Jergović, published in 2003.
Jergović was born in Sarajevo in 1966 to Croatian parents and moved from there to Zagreb in 1993. He is quite prolific. A number of his books are out in translation, including the short story Sarajevo Marlboro and novels Kin and The Walnut Mansion. The translator of The Walnut Mansion, Stephen Dickey, has noted that Jergović is, quote, one of the top two contemporary Croatian writers, the other being Dubravko Ugrešić. If Ugrešić is better known among Anglophone readers, this is due in part to the fact that Jergović has remained continually on the ground in Bosnia and Croatia, writing squarely for the local populations of Bosnians, Croats, and Serbs, a position that has resulted in fewer of his works being published in English translations.
In Walnut Mansion, you have lots of references to specific elements of Yugoslav history, culture, consumer culture that wouldn't necessarily be understood unless you've lived in Yugoslavia or understand some context for what's going on here. I think for so many authors from the region, there is one always this Balkanist discourse of the Balkans are just this incomprehensible, mysterious region that's just impossible to parse. And on the flip side, there being a lot of history in the region, and without, depending on where you grew up or where you're coming from, you may have zero context for the region.
In fact, the stories in Jergović's books almost exclusively take place in the former Yugoslavia, mostly in Croatia and Bosnia, making countless references to geographic, cultural, political, and historical realities that render his work not only difficult to translate, but also to read. As Dickey writes, Jergović is the contemporary paradigm of a Balkan/Southeast European storyteller. He writes stories and novels replete with the charm and tragedy of the region that local and outsider alike simply can't put down.
This book is pulling on this idea of like a family saga or a family epic. And so it's based on a woman named Regina Della Valle and her family, particularly her daughter Diana, who are living in Dubrovnik. The novel's mostly set in Croatia and Bosnia. And I think in some ways it's emblematic of a shift in the region and as well as an international sense of a turn a little bit away from postmodern and towards different forms of realism. Some might call it hybrid realism.
If the Bridge on the Drina unfolded over an epic span of four centuries, the Walnut Mansion unfolds over an epic span of 100 years and five generations of a single family. According to Dickey, if the Walnut Mansion has an epic scale, its epic is not the heroism of South Slavic tradition, but an epic of small, ordinary people. And it is in particular an epic of women who are the central characters that provide continuity to the story. The central theme of the novel is how these women struggle and endure amid the fallout from the misfortune and cataclysms, most notably the Second World War, that afflicted those living in the lands of the former Yugoslavia during the 20th century.
The novel begins in the late 1990s, and then it goes backwards into the past, and kind of the chapters actually count downwards, but it's kind of pulling into the history, which I think is a really a way of trying to understand this 20th century idea. So basically, when the novel opens, we have this Regina Della Valle. She's 97, and at this point, she has gone violently insane. And we meet her through her daughter, Diana. But Regina has gone completely berserk. She's turned into a quote-unquote monster. She's destroying the apartment that she's living, spreading excrement across the walls, hurling curses at everyone, saying the worst things. And Diana is ultimately able to bring her into a hospital and through kind of winning over the sympathy of a doctor to get her euthanized. This is just the beginning of the book of her trying to explain herself. She goes to the police station, try to exonerate the doctor who has euthanized her mother, who's interestingly a police archivist. So I think also at least comments on, of setting history straight and all these topics. We have this idea of this really tragic and inglorious end to this woman's life, Regina. Just this horrible, violent, brutal ending that ultimately euthanized, unable to survive any longer. So here we can already see just in this first chapter that in some ways Jergović is probably hinting, connecting Regina's life with Yugoslavia, that this ending, this horrible, horrible ending to this woman's life. And then basically from there on, each chapter set at a different time during history in the 20th century, unfolding mostly set around Regina, her family, as well as various other people. It's a whole host of characters, dozens of people across time periods and places. And it's kind of, this history of Yugoslavia in some ways over a century.
The reverse chronology of the novel is oddly suitable for outside readers, the majority of whom first learned about Yugoslavia at its bloody end and only slowly worked their way backward to learn a history of the country, notes Dickey.
Some of the ideas that are explored by Jergović and other authors in this time is the idea of how to understand history. And for example, in The Walnut Mansion, I think Jergović is telling history is arbitrary, it's random, it's popping up in random places. The critical junctures, the decisive things that happen in history just occur. There's no way to predict them. They happen spontaneously. And someone says one thing and we see because we're moving backwards through time that we know what that one person said this one thing or did this one thing that led to all these kind of future outcomes. So that's one way of understanding history. But in some ways, there's no way to understand it at all. that's in some ways what the vision of history that's articulated by Yerkovich is, kind of prioritizing the personal over the historical. That's an important trend that we're seeing in other authors coming from former Yugoslavia. But the idea that history can kind of only be measured and understood through lives and personal experiences, but these grand narratives, they can't explain history, and especially all of the things that happened in the 20th century in Yugoslavia, the violence and the disillusion and the loss of lives. And there are several examples of this throughout the book where something really important is happening. A historical moment, for example, the shelling of Dubrovnik's happening, and Regina and Diana are fighting over the raising of Diana's daughter, Mirna.
As in movies, Tito's death represents an important moment in the lives of literary characters as well.
Diana's husband is killed in a car crash just at the time of Tito's death. But here we see this idea that the personal tragedy of the loss of Diana's husband and the father of her children takes priority almost over the death of Tito, which was this, you know, obviously national tragedy. But I think it's in some ways this alternative vision for how to understand history, how to understand Yugoslavia within the one that mentioned. There's almost like it's like a dialectic between, is Regina's story an allegory for Yugoslavia? And we see this in a lot of authors, I think, from former Yugoslavia in Bridge on the Drina, for example, or Dictionary of the Hazards. In some ways, are more allegorical novels. You know, we get these bits and pieces, for instance, in Andrić's novel, different characters, but we have a little bit less of an investment because we're popping across different times. While in this novel, we're really invested in Regina's life. We get her whole life story. So it's, I think, almost this, is Regina's story an allegory for Yugoslavia, or is Yugoslavia an allegory for Regina's life and her experience of the 20th century? But I think it's just trying to just grasp what happened in the 20th century in Yugoslavia and how can it be represented. Another example, in the Walnut Mansion, you have Regina has five brothers, and three of those brothers end up on different sides of World War II. One ends up as a devoted Ustasha and hangs a portrait of Ante Pavlovich in the bar he owns. One ends up as a partisan colonel, and one ends up as a Chetnik, which I think in some ways is kind of this, again, this allegory of Yugoslavia being, you know, these different sides fighting within one family, but also this idea of just this incredible amount of history happening, an incredible amount of changes that are ongoing.
The personal gets elevated in another literary trend, autofiction. In the former Yugoslavia, the themes include
the wars of the 1990s, emigration, and the post-socialist space, whether that's political, economic, cultural, all those ideas. There's importantly kind of two generations of authors here, authors born in the 1960s or early 1970s who experienced the war more as adults. These include authors like Alexander Hemun, Samizdin Mehmedinovic, Faruk Shehic, Slovenian author named Sebastian Pregel, Montenegrin Bosnian author named Andrei Nikolaidis, or the Macedonian author Lydia Dimkovska.
Alexander Hemun's first works, The Question of Bruno and Nowhere Man, accompanied my journey back to Yugoslavia. Very autobiographical, very well written, if a bit repetitive, though of course understandably so, in its themes of dealing with war, which caught Hemun in the United States, and of immigration.
And then a second generation of authors born more in the late 1970s or 80s, who experienced the war either as children or infants, and particularly also through their families and the aftermath of the war. And here we have authors like Sasha Stanišić, Lena Bastašić, Ismet Purčić, Leila Kalamujić, Rumena Bujarovska, and Pajtim Statoci. That second generation of authors have a little bit of a different focus. So we have also ideas of returning important here. Recent novels by Lena Bastašić and Sasha Stanišić have ideas of returning, of like going of people, characters in their novels or in their fiction who have left Yugoslavia and then coming back after immigration to try to understand what Yugoslavia meant and what it means, but through a much more personal lens, not these kind of broader national questions, but really what it means to them, to their family, to their roots, to their ancestry, etc.
Buyas too recommends some of these authors. In terms of contemporary literature, At Denchi Reads favors women authors and short stories.
I really want to promote this lady because she's amazing and I feel she's not appreciated enough in Croatia where she lives. Her name is Asja Bakić. She's a writer and blogger based in Zagreb in Croatia, originally from Bosnia. I simply adore her short stories because she is something different. She is a breath of fresh air. When you are a small country, then your literary scene is also very small, you know, and topics that get represented in the literature and the way it's represented is also very, you know, like predictable. So I feel like her influences are really international and that she is not just like copy-pasting stuff, but also infusing a lot of local stuff in this international influences. The second reason why I love her is that she is very feminist. So she would be very critical of certain patriarchal structures, traditions, and very progressive in the way she sees the world. Progressive also in the way she sees literature. You know, she's very playful with her stories. She's mixing a lot of genres. And so I love that she's sort of combining her very literary style with topics that are very science fiction, very fantasy, very open to these different worlds, you know. She's just combining a lot of stuff and making it her own.
Like Jergović, Asja Bakić is from Bosnia and Herzegovina, from Tuzla to be exact. She was not yet a teenager when the war started. Another author Bujas recommends is
Rumena Bujarovska. She's from Macedonia. Her short story book called My Husband is a big hit in Europe, got translated to many languages. It's also, of course, feminist and critical of the society and the world we live in and traditional stuff here in the Balkans.
My Husband was also made into a theater play. Bujarovska also translates from English to Macedonian. Like Bakic, Bujarovska has been named among new voices from Europe.
The third author I would like to mention is Alana Bastasic, originally from Bosnia. I think she's located right now in Berlin, Germany. Only her novel, Catch the Rabbit, is translated, although her short stories are wonderful. Catch the Rabbit was translated to many languages, and it deals with sort of war experience in Bosnia in a completely different a point of view that includes people who grew up in the war but didn't directly participate in it.
Bastasic's debut novel, Catch the Rabbit, which she translated herself, is, quote, a modern-day Alice in Wonderland set in post-war Bosnia in which two young women plunge into the elusive landscape of their shared story. The book won the 2020 EU Prize for Literature.
Asja Bakic is definitely on the lighter side. She can be critical of stuff, but her sense of humor makes it much lighter. Her sense of irony and just making fun of stuff. Although she talks about important stuff, she's on the light side. The other two I mentioned, Rumena Bujarovska and Lana Bastasic, they are dealing with certain like more heavier topics. But once again, their writing style is not that heavy, which was really challenging with Central European literature before.
If you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you'll recognize the name of the final author Bujas recommends.
She is from Croatia. Her name is Maša Kolanović. She's such an amazing short story writer, and I'm so sorry that she's not translated to English yet. I hope she will. She did receive a European Literature Award a couple of years back. Two of her books were translated to German, but the one I want to highlight right now, well, in Croatian, it's Poštovani kukci i druge jezive priče, Respected Bugs and Other Dear Bugs and Other Scary Stories. It's sort of a wonderful introduction to society of Croatia, political climate, and all this sort of changes we were going through since the 90s. She even has a couple of stories about tourism and how it affects us and how it sort of directs our everyday life. You know, tourism is a very important part of living in Croatia, especially where I live. She has lots of similarities with Asja Bakić in doing this in a very sort of funny, light way that you can read like as a summer literature during your summer vacation. But still, these topics are very deep, important, and you can really learn about the country and the society reading these stories. I really hope they do get translated. I think it would definitely be a great introduction to everyone who is like vacationing in Croatia and wants to learn more about us.
You may remember Kolanović, whose day job is professor of literature at Zagreb University, from episode 36, Dream of the Yugoslav 80s. There's some good news considering translation of Kolanović's work. More on that in the second part of this literature series in the next episode. Some stories and excerpts from Poštovani kupci i druge jezive priče are available online by various translators. One is in the Asymptote Journal, another is at Jonathan Boosfield's website Stray Satellite, and another still on the page of the European Union Prize for Literature, which describes the award-winning book as one that, quote, tells of the absurdity of existence connected to ruthless capitalism, with protagonists who try to preserve their dignity while floundering like bugs and sometimes literally cracking up. Stories in which life and death intertwine alongside laughter, some tears in the eyes, and a lump in the throat.
That book was very popular in Croatia. Like, people were reading it like crazy.
The stylistic and thematic shifts are indeed generational.
this experience of rupture of this of the wars and the dissolution of Yugoslavia being this almost before and after, you know, the pre and post Yugoslavia, family and friends before and after, that period marking a juncture and moving from youth to adulthood. We see this in a lot of novels, the idea of both just the experience of the 1990s, you know, forcing people into adulthood, but also people who were children before the war who did come of age just biologically during that period. And then also the ideas around the separation of loss of language and culture, especially with emigration of people that began writing in other languages or learning other languages, and how that could disconnect them from parents, from other family, from people who remain living in the former Yugoslavia. Particularly, I think also the experience of trauma is something that is so important to these authors, of the idea of trauma being passed down through families across time and space, existing, carried with them, found, rediscovered once returning, all of these ideas.
Emblematic of this trend is Pajtim Statuci, an author who was born in 1990 in Kosovo and moved from Yugoslavia with his family to Finland in 1992.
Two of his novels in the past decade, My Cat Yugoslavia, which was published in 2014, and Bola, which was published in 2019, concern characters who have a lived experience, which is one, in some ways, somewhat reminiscent of Statuci's, who are children of Kosovar Albanians who fled Kosovo to Finland, and the experience of emigration, of being separated. But then also in those novels, both the primary characters return to Kosovo to try to understand ideas around what it meant to live in Yugoslavia, what Yugoslavia meant, what Kosovo is, all of these questions. And here I think is also maybe a good example of this rise of more specific national literatures, where I think Statovci's novels are dealing with a specific experience of Kosovo during Yugoslavia, during the 1990s and post-2000. They don't have necessarily these universalist pretensions. They are focused on a more specific national context.
So how does Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia, socialist Yugoslavia, feature in this serious literature?
Well, the authors that I've mentioned are all sort of like born in the 80s. Like me, I was also born in the 80s and sort of lived through the last years of Yugoslavia. Barely remember it. But definitely wars had bigger effect on us, and the falling apart of crumbling of Yugoslavia had better effect on us than Yugoslavia itself. So I don't know. I didn't notice, besides Lana Bastasic, I didn't notice anyone else referencing Yugoslavia. Maybe here and there, like as a sideways comment, not something that would be the focus of their stories.
It does depend on the writers, on the author's age and generation, the topics they deal with, for sure. We would probably see more of Yugoslavia in authors who were born in the 60s, 70s.
I mean, for us born in the 80s, we still have some traces of it, of course. But I don't know, like today's generations, like Gen Z, for them, Yugoslavia is like Mars.
They might hear their parents or grandparents talk about it, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, and that too is also sort of like phase with years, you know. People have their daily life, their daily struggles, and things have changed so much in the meantime, at least here in Croatia, that Yugoslavia sort of fades as a topic of conversation.
Right, and here I am keeping it in the center of what I do.
And you're not from Yugoslavia, right? But it's the irony of Yugoslavia, or maybe it's like a beauty of Yugoslavia, you know? It will attract people who are not from it. You know, I was born in 1981, and once I was filling a form for a scholarship, and they were like, "Where were you born?" I put Croatia, and a computer told me, the country of your origin did not exist at the time of your birth. I was like confused for a moment. I was like, where was I born? Did I forget where I was born? What is going on? And then I was like, oh yeah, I was born in Yugoslavia. What?
All that said,
lately, there's been a sort of a trend to write more about light topics, more lighter topics, not like, you know, wars and dark times and existential angst, but also about just regular everyday stuff. Not just in Croatian literature, where I'm from Croatia, but also from other countries, from Montenegro, from Slovenia, from Serbia. There's been this push towards more lighter topics because readership is asking for it. You know, readers want to read lighter stuff.
While I think so many books and authors from the region are dealing and thinking about some of these bigger questions about history, about Yugoslavia, about politics, about post-socialism, these are also just wonderful books that can be strongly plot-driven, can be about character development, so much more than that. So I don't want to just limit it to one way of reading and understanding these books, but I think they can be read and understood, particularly in this context of Yugoslavia and the post-Yugoslav space. But yeah, I would encourage all listeners to just explore more books and more authors from the region.
It's very hard to talk about literature. It's much easier to read it.
Next on Remembering Yugoslavia.
It's refreshing to read an author from a region or a country you don't know about or you only know very little about. And then it comes down to just the quality of the storytelling. There are incredible contemporary authors from Croatia and Slovenia and Bosnia and Herzegovina and Macedonia and the entire region.
In episode 90, we'll continue about ex or post-Yugoslav literature, focusing this time on translations. Tune in wherever you listen to podcasts and follow to make sure you don't miss out. That's all for this episode of Remembering Yugoslavia. Thank you for listening and reading. Find additional information, sources, embeds, links, and a transcript of this episode at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast. All guests' opinions expressed are solely their own. Unless otherwise noted, they do not express, reflect, or represent the views or opinions of any third party, including myself. Outro music courtesy of Robert Petrić, the track Rainmaker by Petar Alargić, licensed under Creative Commons. I am Petar Korchniak. Ciao!